Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Last time we talked a little bit about multitasking, as it relates to distraction, the inner distractions, and to a certain extent, outer distractions. But in this episode, we're going to really get down to brass tacks about multitasking in the human mind, and if ultimately it is even possible.
That's right, because you know we all do it at all times. In fact, I bet a lot of you out there right now are listening to us and doing something else. And of course, we do that, right? I mean, when I'm working on something, I'll tend to listen to music or podcasts. Mm-hmm. So in one way, you could say that as a society, we can't not multitask just because of where we are.
Yeah, it is a busy, busy world. We inevitably complicate our lives with this endeavor and that endeavor. We have, you know, we have family and home and relationship stuff we need to take care of. We have bills we need to take care of. There's stuff around the house. There are pets who are pooping in boxes, and those boxes need to be cleaned out. We have jobs. We have transportation we have to take. There are varying levels of news that we ideally want to keep an eye on. And then we have recreations, and we have passions that we wish to pursue as well.
It's true.
And if you're lucky, you have a few of those things that are so satisfying that when you engage in them, everything else can fade away for a little bit. And you can sort of turn off the chatter, turn off the multitasking noise. Like in researching this, I couldn't help but think about the default network that we talked about a little bit, about mm-hmm. the endless chatter, and about loops that have not been closed.
Mm-hmm.
These little things in our lives that we haven't checked off yet, so they're always resonating when we see that person or drive by that building or whatever the case may be. We have all of this stuff just chattering in the background.
Yeah, and as you had alluded to, when we get in that flow state, when we unitask, that is when we can experience the chattering just kind of going away, right? Because
right.
You get into that lovely state where you're only doing one thing and you're really enjoying it. But most of the time, we are dipping our fingers and our thoughts in a multitude of things, and we think we're good at it, but we are not. We're going to discuss more about that today.
And I love that you mentioned unitasking, because it instantly brings my mind to to cooking. And the idea, of course, that a unitasker is a kitchen object that has only one purpose. And certain food people tend to frown on the idea of a unitasker because it's like it's a wasted gadget. Like, why do you have a melon baller? It can only be used for melon balling when you could use, you know, something else that can have multiple functions. Because it's actually turned out in some of the experiments we looked at, or so I guess more in the commentary on some of the experiments we looked at, cooking, like a really busy professional restaurant kitchen mm-hmm. is often considered an environment where multitasking shines, where if multitasking is possible and people can do it or at least try to do it, that's one of the places you want to, because there's so many different tasks, so many different meals being prepared mm-hmm. in varying arrangements for different tables, and only so many instruments and ingredients with which to create it all.
Well, now some people might argue that those people are super taskers, and we talked about that in the last podcast, but some other people might say it's pretty rote because you're doing the same ingredients, the same recipes over and over again. And mm-hmm. things, if you've ever been inside a professional kitchen or you work in one, you already know that things are already set forth pretty clearly. The mise en scène is already set up for each station. In other words, everything is where it needs to be. So it becomes a lot more intuitive to do that work. But the rest of us, the 99% of us, right, who are not super taskers, who tend to go about our day in a haphazard way, sometimes we think we're good at this multitasking. But just as an example of how we are not, I wanted to bring up email voice.
Okay. This is like the Siri thing, right?
The what?
The Siri thing?
No. This is, have you ever been on the phone with someone?
Okay.
You're having an engaging conversation. You're pouring your heart out.
Okay.
They're with you. And all of a sudden, someone seems suddenly disconnected. And they start to go, what? Huh? That, and then you hear tapping in the background. And you realize,
oh my God,
you're emailing as I am pouring out this darkest secret of my life to you.
I don't know that I've encountered it personally, but maybe they're just clacking really quietly.
I have to say that there are a number of people in my life who are multitaskers, particularly when it comes to the phone. So I have noticed this, but I think all of you out there probably have experienced this at one point or another. So it comes back to this idea that you really can only do one task well at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Even something as rote as talking on the phone can be impaired if you're trying to do something like emailing or reading or something.
Yeah, I do have to say that there have been some individuals that I've interviewed either for this podcast or for news stories, and there'll be a point where I'm like, oh my goodness, they're driving a car. There's no way I'm going to get some good copy out of them. Like a recent one I did, I'm not going to out them as having driven for the first portion of the interview, and I ended up not using that part because, unsurprisingly, he was much better once he stopped driving his car. But there was this one virtual reality dude who's kind of like the hotshot. He's a little older now, but like especially back in the early days of virtual reality, he was a real superstar. You know, he was doing some photo shoots for the different tech magazines and all. And I remember interviewing, and I'm like, oh my goodness, he is in a convertible. He's driving down, and I'm imagining like a highway out of Fear and Loathing, and he's chatting with me about virtual reality. He gave me some great copy, but he was driving a convertible at God knows what speed. So
better, I think, in a convertible than in the bathroom. Has someone ever taken you to the bathroom while they've been on the phone?
No, I mean I've heard people doing it here at work,
mm-hmm.
but luckily nobody has revealed themselves as doing that during an interview.
It's amazing to me. It's a sanctuary. You probably shouldn't bring other people in with you, even if they're disconnected in a way.
I had another guy that was making coffee while talking to me about global warming and climate change. And just in the background, suddenly he's grinding beans. but anyway, I digress.
Okay, so obviously, yeah, we're not great at multitasking. If you need another example, another classic example is texting and driving. The RAC Foundation, which is a British nonprofit organization that focuses on driving issues, asked 17 drivers aged 17 to 24 to use a driving simulator to see how texting affected their driving. The reaction time was around 35% slower when writing a text message, slower than driving drunk or stoned. Mm. And we had mentioned this in the last podcast. This is due to doing two visual tasks at the same time, because apparently if you're going to multitask, you should not do two of the same types of tasks at the same time.
Yeah, because talking on the phone is certainly distracts. You're still, quote-unquote, multitasking
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent. But you're combining speaking auditory with visual. But when you are, like you say, when you're driving and you're trying to text, you're combining two visual things. So both of those things, the performance rate drops impressively.
That's right. So if you're going to multitask in the smartest way you can, and obviously texting and driving is not smart at all, but there's a good reason for that. Again, visually, if you're taxing yourself in that way, there's no way that you can really give the ultimate attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, because both of these, especially the driving, there's so many variables. Even though we do it enough to where it kind of becomes automatic, but there's so many variables in driving. There's so many things you have to control that the impact of multitasking really takes a toll on your performance. As we mentioned in the other podcast, if you're chewing gum while walking, you're technically doing two things at the same time, but the required skill in both of those tasks is so low, you're probably not going to see any change in your ability.
But if you're talking and you're walking, you are sure to miss the clown that rides past you,
yeah,
as we saw in another study.
Exactly.
Right.
So let's come back to the supertasker. And we touched on this a little bit in the previous episode, but now we're gonna dive a little deeper into what this is and who these people are. I mean, in a way, they're kind of the Kwisatz Haderach of the tasking world.
Mm-hmm.
Dune fans will remember that's the idea that it's like the perfect godlike being that will deliver the planet. Right?
Okay, I was just going to say bless you. What was the name of it again?
The Kwisatz Haderach.
Okay, yeah. Bless you.
Yeah, thank you. So the idea of the supertasker, like I said, they're one in 100, very rare. Most of us cannot multitask, but as one experiment revealed, you can find individuals whose brains seem uniquely capable of handling multiple things at once.
It's true. University of Utah professors David Strayer and John Watson put student subjects into a driving simulator, and then at the same time, they received a call on a hands-free cell phone. And Strayer says that they engaged in a conversation that involved memorizing strings of words that were presented as well as solving math problems.
So they're driving along. They get this call. And first they're asked if these math problems are correct. They're given these examples. And then they're asked to list words in order. All right. And there are up to 5 math problems and words that could be concluded in a single conversation. Finally, the drivers were asked to follow another car at a specific distance. Keep a reasonable distance between themselves and that car. Not crash into them. And that's what they studied, was the distance between that car to see how the conversation affected that distancing. All right? So most did far worse when doing both tasks than when they did only a single task. Their brake reaction time was much longer, and they tended to follow the lead vehicle to greater distance. In addition, their memory and math performances suffered as well. But in the course of all these studies, out of about 1,000 students, they found around 12 who didn't have worse driving performance and on average performed better on the memory and math tasks while they were driving. And so here we have the Kwisatz Haderach, the messiah of multitasking, the quote-unquote supertaskers.
So that's amazing to me because 988 of them tanked, right?
Yeah.
But these 12, these special 12, something is going on, obviously, with them to allow them to have such recall. Now, they want to do follow-up studies about this, obviously,
right,
and do a little bit more MRI and get into the brain because, obviously, that's where they're going to find some answers to their questions about what's going on. And we should probably dip into the brain as well and figure out what parts are active here when we're multitasking.
Yes, let's dip in with a melon baller, if it were.
Okay, let me take out a little bit of the prefrontal cortex because apparently this is very important because it's part of the brain plans and coordinate actions. And here's a really cool thing. In humans, the prefrontal cortex is about 1/3 of the entire cortex, while in dogs and cats it's about 4 or 5%. Monkeys about 15%. So this means the bigger the prefrontal cortex, the more flexible our behavior can be and the more we can multitask. So some people would actually argue that our early hominid ancestors had to multitask. This didn't start, in the 20th century.
Right.
This rabid multitasking, although, of course, it's gotten much more aggressive. But, as soon as early man had to deal with multiple things going on, maybe it's stoking a fire.
Certainly when you get into tool use and the use of cooking and basically external digestion, you're beginning to... The human as an organism is beginning to expand in all of these varying occupations. And then once this culture builds up, and certainly once you reach the point where individuals can specialize in a given task, all the more.
Right. So there's an idea that it's hardwired in us. We need to do it. We're supposed to do it. But to what degree, I guess, is the question. And to what degree have we evolved alongside what we're actually capable of doing now, or sort of capable of doing? What we find out is that when we are doing a couple things at once, yes, we've got the prefrontal cortex to do it, but we're demanding much more of the cognitive process. You and I have talked about this before, this idea that we have a finite amount of mental energy that
right.
we can sometimes bolster with food and whatnot.
It's like a video game. You have a power meter, mm-hmm. and everything that happens to you in the course of the day is going to influence that power meter. And the occasional power-up may give you a little boost, but at the end of the day, it's going to wear out.
Yeah, but let's say like you are depleted, you don't have, you know, a good glucose bump there with mm-hmm. a piece of food or an apple or something like that, and you're just tired and you're multitasking, you are demanding a lot. You've got a big cognitive load going on, and this is when you see the brain entering into what we call bottlenecking. And that's just what it sounds like, right?
Yes.
Nothing's really getting through because you're trying to do a bunch of tasks at once. And this is because you're doing something called task switching.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O Allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Right. Now, this is really interesting because it gets into the idea that there really isn't any such thing as multitasking. The idea that, well, not in the sense that we're doing two things at once. Instead, we're more like an individual who instead of doing one thing with one hand and one thing with the other, is switching back and forth between two tasks with both hands. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as a train conductor too, right? Yeah. Like you're switching tracks.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, well, there's hence the title of the podcast, a one-track mind, which is generally kind of used as a put-down. Oh, they've got a one-track mind. They're only thinking about one thing. But at any given moment, we can only have a one-track mind. That's just the extent of our cognitive capabilities. And I can also think of it like a two-deck tape player, you know? You got two decks there. You got two different tapes in there. Maybe one's Queen's Greatest Hits, and maybe the other one is Bob Seger's Greatest Hits. But you're only going to play Bob Seger or Queen. You're not going to play them both at the same time.
Unless you do a little mashup thing, which is going to require some pre-planning. And it's still just one track, right?
Exactly.
Brain scans during task switching show activity in four major areas. The prefrontal cortex, of course, which is involved in shifting and focusing your attention and selecting which task to do when. And then you've got the posterior parietal lobe, which activates rules for each task you switch to. The anterior cingulate gyrus monitors errors, again, very important. We'll talk more about that. And the premotor cortex. It's one of those mornings. Premotor cortex is preparing you to move in some way, right? That's the part that makes your hands and your legs and your feet all move together. So, according to Psychology Today's article, the true cost of multitasking, each task switch might waste only 1/10 of a second. But if you do a lot of switching throughout the day, this can add up to a loss of 40% of your productivity.
Yeah, it's like if you're doing two different things in two different rooms of your house. You're going to have to move back and forth between the two. And it may not be much of a distance, but the more you go back and forth, the more you're pacing around the house. It's also interesting thinking in looking at this multitasking to think of it as kind of juggling as well.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you have three balls and you're trying to keep at least one of them in the air at any given moment. But that tends to serve as a slightly better way of thinking about it. There's a study in the July 16th episode of Neuron that suggested that our brains aren't really built to handle parallel processing like we've been talking about. But the good news is that studies have shown that extensive training can make us better at doing two things at once or more, you know, juggling back and forth between these two different things. And there are various theories on why this is the case. But one of the strong ones is that with a lot of practice, certain routines become kind of automatic. An example of this that came to mind actually has to do with, I was reading some Roger Ebert reviews the other day, because he tends to be my go-to guy. Like, with a lot of people, he's kind of my go-to guy for movie reviews. And I ran across a thread where he was responding to some listener feedback on his review for Silent Hill, the movie based on a video game that came out a few years back from Christophe Gans, wonderful, imaginative French director who did Brotherhood of the Wolf. And Ebert was just kind of perplexed by the movie. He was just like, it didn't really make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked him a few questions about it. And Ebert drew some parallels to the study that analyzed people's brain activity during video games. And when they first start playing a video game, a whole lot of the brain area lights up, because they're having to deal with new controls and new environment and new activities. But as they become better and better at the game, that neural activity shrinks down to like just a very small area.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this, we get into the whole idea of video games as a release. Like, I don't want to use my whole brain. I just want to use a very little portion of it and give my thinking a rest.
Uh-huh.
So
which kind of goes into the flow state in a weird way, right?
Yeah. And so the better you become at a task, the more of a flow state it is, mm-hmm. or the more familiar you are with the various things that go into it. Like, I think of activities we do on the computer, like goodness, I used to, when I worked in newspapers, I had to use InDesign all the time to mm-hmm. build these pages. And they're all these hotkeys, you know, different combinations that just save you enormous amounts of time. Mm-hmm. And you end up just committing those to memory. And then inevitably you reach that point where you're having to train someone else in how to use it. And cannot, you know, and there's like no actual memory of what any of those hotkeys are. Like, I could only pull them up by doing them.
It's like muscle memory.
Yeah, just like pure muscle memory.
Yeah.
So I had, my brain had refined it down to just the bare minimum amount of thought required to carry it out, mm-hmm. which enabled me to do things like build pages and listen to science podcasts mm-hmm. at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because I used to do a lot of database work, and it was sort of the same thing. And sometimes I felt like, you know, sort of like I was in the Matrix and I was just like moving through space and time. And
yeah. And it felt emotionally fulfilling because you're doing all these things at once.
Yeah. You're right, because I felt like I was being really productive.
Like the Kwisatz Haderach making a spreadsheet. Yeah.
In that moment, I might have, just because it depended on the task, again, it could have been rote at that point. But if I had to engage a little bit more cognitive muscle, not so much. Now, here's the question.
Yes.
Men, women, do we have a difference here in multitasking? Is the jury out? Is it true that women are great multitaskers, or is it just sort of cultural baggage?
I've been thinking about this one, because in terms of cultural baggage, I mean, I can definitely see where individuals would, and I'm not without even dragging any science into it yet, I can see where the cultural idea that women are multitaskers and men are not, that both men and women could really get behind that idea. Mm-hmm. Because for women, if someone says, oh, well, you're a natural multitasker, it's like, thank you. That's great, because that means I'm capable of doing it. I am the Kwisatz Haderach of spreadsheets. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And then for men, if someone says, don't worry, you're just not, your gender is not about multitasking, then it's kind of like, well, whew, thank goodness. That's a load off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. I can only be expected to do one task well at any given time. So I've kind of got an out for all the other things I screw up in my life.
All right. Well, so I'm about to mention this study, but before I do so, I will say that, and I'd like to hear from the women out there too, maybe you don't want to be known as a multitasker. Maybe you feel the cultural baggage of that. And I say that because there was a 2011 study at the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. And this found that working mothers, okay, this is a family mm-hmm. of working mothers and fathers, they spend about 10 more hours per week multitasking than do working fathers. So we're talking about 48.3 hours as compared to 38.9 for dads, okay? The lead author of the study, Shira Offer, said, when they multitask at home, for example, mothers are more likely than fathers to engage in housework or childcare activities, which are usually labor-intensive efforts. Fathers, by contrast, tend to engage in other types of activities when they multitask at home, such as talking to a third person or engaging in self-care. These are less burdensome experiences. So this is very interesting to me, because I do think that the cultural norm has informed the behavior. And as someone who is a working mom and a multitasker, I guess, with a capital M, you do kind of feel that sense of it. I don't feel that I'm good at it, but mm-hmm. some of these things are very rote and they're very physical and they're easy to do, but it still takes a lot of energy out of you.
Yeah, that makes sense. I found it interesting that some of the older anthropology kind of arguments about this were that if you go back to our most ancient days, you had men who had to go out and do one thing, mm-hmm. supposedly. We were hunter-gatherers, so the men went out to hunt down and kill particular animals, and then the women gathered things and looked after the children and kept the fire going and all that, which I guess kind of, as an idea, it's kind of interesting, but apparently holds no real sway over the argument.
But see, the thing about that, too, is that not only are they keeping, they're tending the children in the fire, but they're also foraging, because most of the diet is predicated on their ability to go out and find foods that are non-meat.
Right. And then also the men, and we're, again, going with sort of a non-historical, vague idea of the past when we're discussing this. But yeah, if you're going out to hunt an animal, it's not quite as simple as just one single task. Mm-hmm. You're having to deal with weapon crafting, weapon upkeep, even if that weapon is just like a sharpened stone or a bone, you know. Still, you got to keep it in good repair. You're having to possibly track animals, and if you're doing it on foot, you're talking about a rather labor-intensive hunt there. So I don't even buy that hunting for food in our in the ancient times would have been a single one-track mind kind of a deal.
Right, right. So what I'm proposing is I think that men can multitask just as well as women, but perhaps there's some cultural stuff going on there.
Yeah.
However, we have to talk about the corpus callosum because apparently in women, or not apparently, we know for sure that this part of the brain, which handles communication between the two hemispheres, is actually wider than in men's brains.
Huh.
Which has made some people wonder whether or not this helps to synthesize information better in women, to communicate better in both sides of the hemispheres. But we don't have any really big conclusive evidence that says this allows women to multitask better.
Along the same lines, there was a French National Institute of Health and Medical Research study, and they took 32 right-handed people, and they were asked to match some letters. And, of course, given this is a study of the brain, of course, we had fMRIs loaded up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Scanning the brain, seeing what's flowing around, what kind of activity is taking place. And it's also important that there is money on the line. There's a financial reward for the participants in this study to match things up correctly. All right. So during this task, both hemispheres of the brain's medial frontal cortex, which is involved in motivation, lights up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then the researchers shook it up. They introduced a second task where the subjects had to match like uppercase letters in addition to matching like lowercase letters with separately occurring reward tallies. So what they found was the subjects' brains divided the two reward-based goals between the two sides of the region of the brain. So what they ended up finding here was that, okay, the area of the brain that was highly active in the observed multitasking behavior was the frontopolar cortex, which organizes pending goals while the brain completes another task. And this is especially well-developed in humans. But they also, the scientists also argued that humans have this problem, though, of deciding between more than two alternatives. And a possible explanation is that they cannot keep in mind and switch back and forth between three or more alternatives.
Okay.
So we're basically A or B. If you start doing A, B, and C, then the cognitive load increases dramatically.
Okay. So, again, there's like that switch on the track, right?
Yeah.
Either or.
Yeah. This was particularly interesting when I think to one of my favorite authors, R. Scott Baker, has a series of fantasy books. I mentioned him before. The first one in the series is The Darkness That Comes Before, and it he has this whole he himself is heavy into psychology and neuroscience and weaves all that through this book. Even though the book deals with magic and the like, and there's sorcerers, he's very into the neuroscience of how that works. And particularly there's a type of magic in the books called the gnosis, and it's revealed eventually in the books that it works by holding two different interpretations of the same spell chant in your mind at the same time.
Hmm.
So being able to work these acts of magic involves the cognitive process of holding two things in your mind, two meanings that are parallel at the same time. And in the books, there's a special character, like a superhuman that emerges, who's able to work even greater works of magic because he can hold three different ideas in his mind at the same time. So I find that to be a really interesting take on magic by combining it with sort of what we know through neuroscience about our ability to multitask.
That is like the mental scrolls of magic in our minds that we're trying to
achieve. Yeah, multitasking is a kind of magic in that regard.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to talk about the cognitive and physiological costs of multitasking, like our short-term memory, for instance.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back, and we're going to look a little bit more at multitasking and what all of this multitasking, or at least these attempts at multitasking, do to our minds.
Okay, so we talked about bottlenecking. We talked about this ability to keep some things in our minds. Well, it turns out that, of course, this all has to do with short-term memory and committing short-term memory into long-term memory if you can. So, of course, if you're multitasking, if you're, let's say you're studying for an exam, mm-hmm. but you're listening to music or you're watching TV, turns out your short-term memory is going to be taxed and you're probably not going to get a lot of recall out of that experience. Our short-term memories can only store between 5 and 9 things at once. So when information doesn't make it into short-term memory, it can't be transferred into long-term memory for recall later. Okay, that's why if you're watching TV while you're studying, it's not going to be as effective. So if you can't recall it, you can't use it.
Now, I did also find in one of our studies we were looking at, they did argue that it depends on what you're doing. Because I was very concerned about the music thing. Mm-hmm. Because I listen to music all the time while I work, so I started thinking, well, maybe I'm doing all this wrong, and then and I need to cut out the music. But they did say that for some people, listening to music while working actually makes them more creative because they're using different cognitive functions, which I think lines up well with what I've sort of observed before, mm-hmm. is that if I'm doing something that really requires me to think, then I can't listen to anything with lyrics in it.
Right. We've talked about that before, that lyrics sometimes can mess with what you're trying to do, right? Because you hear those messages.
Because I'm trying to do language, and then if I'm also absorbing language, then that's going to hit both of those categories.
Right. But, you know, so if you're listening to something instrumental in your researching or trying to learn something or studying, then that should be fine. Research shows that people use different areas of the brain for learning and storing new information when they are distracted. So brain scans of people who are distracted or multitasking show activity in the striatum, and this is a region of the brain involved in learning new skills. Brain scans of people who are not distracted show activity in the hippocampus, and this is a region involved in storing and recalling information. So again, it points to this idea that if you are unitasking, if you're studying, if you're researching, you're doing this one thing, then you're engaging your hippocampus more. And that's good because then you're storing those memories and your recall for that material is going to be better later. Now, another thing that multitasking affects is stress.
Yes.
And stress levels. In Professor Gloria Mark's April 2012 study, and we talked about this in the last podcast, this landmark study, she found that after only 20 minutes of interrupted performance, people reported significantly higher stress, frustration, workload, effort, and pressure. So it's like this low-lying level of stress that people put upon themselves when they are multitasking. And psychologist David Meyer at the University of Michigan found that multitasking contributes to the release of stress hormones and adrenaline, which can cause, of course we know this, long-term health problems if not controlled. And it also contributes to the loss of short-term memory. So what you're, the sort of story that comes out here is that if you're multitasking throughout the day and you're doing a lot, what you find is that you've got that low level of anxiety building because it always feels like those loops are open, those loops that we talked about of the tasks that we need to complete.
Yeah, and that also kind of falls back into some of the stereotypes about, say, busy moms, you know, being kind of frazzled, or anybody that's really got a lot on their plate being a bit frazzled because they are doing so many things and there's so many loops open that it's taking an impact on their short-term memory and their ability to perform.
And, you know, in the case of, say, studying for an exam or researching, if you are multitasking, you're trying to do a deep dive into a topic and you're switching between tasks and, you know, in an hour, you've maybe gleaned only 10 minutes of that research. That's not a deep dive. That's not a lot of time to think in depth about any one thing. So, of course, it behooves you to try to unitask in those instances where it's really important to commit that to memory or you really need to concentrate on something.
Yeah. This also leads us into this area referred to as attention deficit trait, which I found really interesting. Now, this is not attention deficit
disorder.
This is attention deficit. This is a trait that emerges due to the environment that you've put yourself in. So you're putting yourself in this environment where there's all the stimuli coming at you. There are all these different tasks that you've put before yourself. You're multitasking or trying to. And it generates basically the symptoms of attention deficit disorder.
I think what's interesting about this is that, again, it's something in our environment, and it's something that we condition ourselves into.
Now, it's a pretty new idea. We've been studying attention deficit disorder for years and years. But this idea of attention deficit trait really comes out of a 2005 Harvard Business Review article, Overloaded Circuits, Why Smart People Underperform. And this was by Glenn Wilson, the guy who wrote this study, and most of these ideas really hinge back to his studies regarding attention deficit as it emerges again as a symptom of environmental stimuli.
Yeah, and he did the study for Hewlett-Packard to look at this productivity of multitasking. What I think is cool that he discovered is that the average worker's functioning IQ, a temporary qualitative state here we're talking about, drops 10 points when multitasking. And that is more than double the 4-point drop that occurs when someone smokes marijuana.
Wow. So, I mean, that really, I mean, especially for anyone out there in a management position, I mean, it really should make you think twice about putting new responsibilities on an employee, right? Because you're basically taking a notch out of their IQ with each task until you just reduce them to a mumbling ball of goo with a whole bunch of spreadsheets to fill up.
Yes, just you can hear the stress buzzing off of that person. Yeah. But, you know, of course, that leads to this idea of how can you best rein this in and manage it? And there's something called the 80-20 rule. This says that 20% of the work you do gives 80% of the impact and effectiveness. So you focus on identifying the 20% of your tasks that are really effective, and then you do them one at a time.
I guess I tend to sort of do maybe a take on that, where since I'm better in the morning, and I guess it makes sense because I haven't had as much time to deplete my cognitive abilities, pick the things that are most important and require the most amount of thought and creativity to do those first, and then do the other things later.
That's the smart way to approach it. But of course, as we found in the last podcast, that people usually do the inverse. They typically kind of distract themselves and multitask earlier in the day, and then they batten down the hatches and concentrate later in the day. But you're right. That's the way to do it, is in the morning is to unitask and then multitask later in the day, because you have more energy in the morning and you're fresh and you haven't become ego depleted by all the choices of that day.
So there you have it. Multitasking, the single track mind. Multitasking is magic. All of these various ways of looking at it, which it really did force me to reevaluate the way I approach all the things I have to do in my life, and really how we function as human beings. But of course, none of this is necessarily new, because people have been figuring this out for ages. In fact, back in the 1740s, Lord Chesterfield offered the following advice. He said, quote, "There is time enough for everything in the course of the day if you do but one thing at a time, but there is not time enough in the year if you will do two things at a time." So Lord Chesterfield knew the importance of really focusing in on a single task, and he knew that you'd have to be a wizard to do two things at once.
You know, purportedly even Albert Einstein weighed in on this, and this is from a Scientific American article about multitasking. He is purported to have said, "Any man who can drive safely while kissing a pretty girl is simply not giving the kiss the attention it deserves."
Yeah.
That rogue.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, yeah, I mean, it just gets down to, if you do try and do two things at once, you're not going to do either thing well.
No.
So. All right. Well, let's call over the robot now and get a little listener mail. First off, we heard from Gregory, who's responding to some stuff I recently said about pugs, the dog breed, because I used to think of the pug as just kind of this amusing but ultimately kind of worthless breed, that it was just kind of bred into a corner physiologically and just wasn't capable of much. But then I saw a helper dog that was a pug at the train station. So Gregory writes in and says, Robert, about pugs, my father-in-law had a beef farm, and his dog, a pug, became one of his farm helpers. Terminator, that's the dog's name, may have been tiny, but he was one of the best dogs I have ever seen to help direct the cows. Since Terminator was so small, he never got stepped on or kicked. He was never made to help, but he liked to do it. As soon as he saw Tom get the barn closed, Term was at the door, jumping and turning circles, waiting for the door to open. I think we were all shocked the first time we saw him in action, but he was tiny but impressive. So that little tidbit comes to us from Gregory. That was very interesting. And then we also heard from our listener, Marta, and she writes in and says, "Me again from Portugal, just a quick comment on your Walls podcast. I am a big fan of Murakami, the Japanese writer, but he has a book that was quite hard for me to get into, Hard-Boiled Wonderland for the End of the World. It's quite fantastic, about a guy whose brain is being experimented on, and it describes two parallel realities, one of his actual life developing, and one of what is going on inside his brain at the same time, the inner world. But this is a very real world, comprised within a long wall. The character arrives at this city, and as he walks past the gates, he is forced to leave his shadow there, for it is that it is the link to his real life and his memories of that life. The story then develops inside the city, and the presence of the wall is quite amazing, omnipotent, unbreached, unbreakable, an actual limit between the two worlds. He is confronted with the fact that there is no way to go back through the wall or the gates, so he needs to find another way. No spoilers, I'll just drop here. Anyway, this is the strangest wall I could remember. Thanks again, Marta."
Well, I like that dropping the shadow as a narrative technique.
Yeah.
You know, because then that's sort of like, what was the movie about dreaming with Leo DiCaprio? Leo, like I know him.
you're talking about the Christopher Nolan film, Inception.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know how they knew when they were dreaming and they were in reality, not reality, they had the turning top. But I like this idea of not seeing your shadow and realizing that you're in this alter universe.
Yeah, that sounds really amazing. It also reminds me of a book I've not read yet. I really want to see read The City and the City by China Melville, but I think it maybe falls along similar lines. But Murakami's great. I haven't read this particular book. Have you read any Murakami?
I haven't.
Kafka on the Shore was a big one.
Okay,
and,
yeah, I know that one.
The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle. Mm-hmm. Both long, but very much in a... I think maybe the... And I'm not no expert by any means on Japanese literature, certainly there seems to be sort of a long-form aspect of his work that maybe doesn't jibe immediately mm-hmm. with a Western reader, but he's a great writer. It's very satisfying, very imaginative. One of the books had talking cats in it, but then also one of the books had a man being skinned alive. So he gives you various aspects of like everyday minutia plus some imaginative, almost kind of cute stuff. But then also there's room for wacky and or horrible happenings as well.
So blood, guts, and kawaii.
Yeah, kind of.
Nice.
So, hey, if you would like to reach out to us and chat with us a little bit about Murakami, about walls, about multitasking, are you a multitasker? Do you think you're a multitasker? What happens when you try and multitask? And then what happens when you're able to set everything aside and focus on that one thing in your life? Or, you know, you can have multiple things in your life that you can really get into a flow state with. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr. On both of those, we go by the handle Stuff to Blow Your Mind. And if you go to Twitter, you'll find us with the handle Blow the Mind.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.